Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You probably know that South African comic Trevor Noah replaced Jon Stewart as host of The Daily Show last year, big shoes to fill. You may not know that Trevor was born to a black South African mother and a Swiss-German dad during apartheid. He was born a crime. He was illegal. His black mom had to hire a fake mom to walk with him to the park. His real mom would walk behind. He couldn't call his white father dad in public the few times he did see him. They'd all be arrested. He was often hidden in his home in black ghettos. Well, now Trevor Noah is talking to the President of the United States. Here he is in their hour-long interview this week.
This is a personal question. It's a little bit selfish. I look up to you because we share a lot in common. We both have parents who are black and white, both half African, south side of Chicago, south side of Africa.
Similar.
In Trevor Noah's new biography, Born a Crime, he tells how he and his mom, a typist, survived poverty at times so bad they ate caterpillars, and violence. His drunken stepdad shot his mom. Incredibly, she lived. Trevor was a bit of a scamp. He got away with things because he didn't know how much black South Africans were afraid of or held in awe his mixed race whiteness. And Trevor Noah joins us from the Daily Show studio in New York. Welcome.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Well, you had me in the first few minutes of the book. Your mom threw you out of a car. In fact, to explain why you hate secondhand cars, I'm just going to read a little bit. We're only on page 9. If it hadn't been for the Volkswagen that didn't work, you never would have looked for the mechanic who became the husband, who became the stepfather, who became the man who tortured us, you and your mom, for years, and put a bullet in the back of my mother's head. I'll take the new car with the warranty every time. And it's that combination we see throughout the book of very serious with levity. Is that how you made it through your life?
Well, I don't know, because, I mean, I haven't made it through yet. So, yeah, it's how I've always processed information. It's how I've processed pain. It's how I work through any issues that face me in life.
Well, place us in time. During apartheid, a white population, a black population, but then also a colored population.
Basically, in South Africa, the apartheid laws were very specific in the separation of races. And even amongst black people, you would be designated a certain tribal group that you were forced to live with. And so now you have to make rules about what constitutes black and white. And colored was a strange decision that the government came up with, where they realized this population was growing, which meant people were clearly breaking these laws. Did you add them to the majority that you were trying to oppress? Or did you designate an entirely different race? And that's what the government did. And for all intents and purposes, colored people have become a culture unto themselves in South Africa.
Well, and what did that mean for you? What were you?
Well, I grew up as black. You know, I mean, the country or the government itself would have classified me as colored because everyone was classified. The government would have called me colored. I would have been deemed colored on my birth certificate were it not for the fact that my mother lied about who my father was and where I was from. I grew up in a country where there were white people who would be, demoted by the government based on the fact that their whiteness had changed, whether people's hair became too curly or their skin became too tanned. It was an insane system. Mm. And I grew up as a black child. I knew no other existence.
Except it wasn't the same life that a black child had. And you talk about how in interacting with other people, for instance, when all the grandmas would like whoop some kids because they'd done something wrong, they were afraid to whoop you because you were white and you might bruise.
Yeah, well, I guess that's where you realize, I mean, in hindsight, as a child, I didn't know why this was happening. I just assumed that it was because I was special as Trevor. You know, I didn't grow up in a world where I was conscious of the fact that I was of a different race. I knew that I was of a different color, but race wasn't something I had been taught about yet. My grandparents were victims of a system that had trained them and indoctrinated into them the belief that they themselves weren't of the same standing as a lighter-skinned person.
Yeah, just so interesting how, as a child, you try to navigate this. With your mother as your guide, tell us about your mother.
My mother was an amazing woman, someone who did not live an easy life at all. She experienced the lowest trenches of poverty, and she worked very hard to raise herself up out of that place through a combination of hard work, determination, and luck, or as she would call it, blessings. She learned to read and write at a mission school. My mother decided to go into jobs and to get training that really no person could use because of the jobs that black people weren't allowed into. And yet when the country changed, all of a sudden there was a skills shortage, and my mother was able to take advantage of that. So she was a person who constantly believed in existing beyond the threshold of where people told her she belonged.
She was fierce.
My mom was very harsh on me, and she always used to say, she'd say, I would rather that you hate me. I would rather be the person who disciplines you, because I discipline you with love. The police out there are not going to be your friend. And that was a motto that many South African mothers have, many black mothers have.
Well, this brings us back to mom throwing you out of the car, out of the moving car. It was because, if I've got this right, you were picked up by a Zulu driver, and he saw that she was a black woman with you, a colored child, immediately thought that, you know, she had been with a white man and was going to punish her. And she realized this as you were driving along.
That story in that instance is specific, but I believe at the end of the day we were unlucky in that we came across a man who had the intention of, you know, sexually assaulting or my mother in that instance. And the
right.
excuse this person used in this instance was that my mother was a whore who sleeps with white men. She reacted the way she always reacted in life, and that was to put herself on the line and get us to safety. And that was the world we were living in.
So she wakes you up, says jump. You jump out of the moving car. By then you also have your baby brother, Andrew. And, you know, there's this scene where, you know, my heart's pounding. What's going to happen here? And suddenly there you are. She breaks out in a huge smile and starts laughing. I started laughing too. We stood there, this little boy and his mom, our arms and legs covered in blood and dirt, laughing together through the pain on the side of the road in the middle of the night. Again, this sort of danger and fear and laughter.
Well, that's life, isn't it? I feel like that's exactly what life is. We have moments of pain. We have moments where we're afraid. But laughter is always the thing that can bring us back to the place we wish we were always in. It is a moment of solace.
Well, some of the stops along the way for you, you steal a car from your stepdad and get pulled over, and there's a week in jail there. You become sort of a mixtape DJ. You're starting to gain a reputation, and you go to play at, I believe it was a Jewish school. And one of your best dancers, his name is Hitler.
Yeah, well, it's an insane world. I mean, I'm still friends with Hitler today, which is a crazy statement to say living
sense.
In a Western world. But when I met him, I mean, I knew of the historical context of his name, but never the gravity of the name and what it stood for or what people took from it in many other places. Because as I talk about in the book, I grew up in a world where there were so many madmen who had in some way affected our world.
We should explain that your people were made to take names in addition to the names they were born with. So they would just take names from the newspapers.
Essentially, that's a vestige of colonialism.
Right.
They forced them to take names which were Christian names, as they called them, or your English name.
And he had a wonderful moment dancing at this Jewish school when suddenly the teachers, the parents, the hundreds of kids in their yarmulkes froze in their tracks and stared aghast at you cheering, "Go Hitler, go Hitler."
It was a horrifying,
horrifying
moment, but a great moment in the book. It was.
I
keep looking back and going, that must have been one of the most horrifying moments those people have ever gone through. I think if anything, the essence of that story and me telling that, you know, that tale was trying to illuminate how easy it is to be completely blind to the possibility that a human being could be living a life absolutely different to yours.
Those were two very different cultures. But even within the black culture in South Africa, there were so many different cultures within one culture. And one of the ways you made your way, and I'm guessing learned some of your skills today at sort of hearing people and listening to people, is by learning all these different languages. Can you call some of them up now? Are they as fluid for you now as they were when you were a child?
Yeah, easily. I still speak all of my African languages. The only language that I've gotten really rusty on is my German, because I don't have many people to speak it to. But, you know, I'm proud that I can, and I celebrate African languages because it goes beyond just my home. It is a culture, and it is a people, and it is a memory that I have and that we have as a nation that I would never want to forget.
Can we hear some Zulu or some Xhosa?
Some Xhosa, I'll give you real quick. This is like one of my mom's favorite phrases. She'd say, which means I will smack you upside the head, you delinquent child, you have no respect for me.
How about, is it Tswana?
Tswana is slightly different. It would be, you know, you'd say to somebody, Dumelang libitso laka ke Trevor Noah. So that's, hello, my name is Trevor Noah.
How many did you speak?
I speak 6 languages.
Zulu?
Ngiyajabula, Robin. Ukuba lapho nawe ku NPR. Ngiyajabula. Ukukhuluma nawe isikhathi sakho. Ngiyajabula ukuba nawe la gule show yakho. I appreciate being here on your show with you.
Well, we loved hearing that. Well, it is just a terrific book, Trevor Noah. We would love to have you back to hear about the next passage, you know, how you went from this life you describe in South Africa to the one that we see now. We'll do that another time.
But thank you so much. I appreciate that.
It's just terrific. Trevor Noah, host of The Daily Show on Comedy Central, author of the new memoir, Born a Crime. Trevor, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.